This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go to another area of this. The theory with the most former law enforcement voices behind it, it says the man on Nancy Guthrie's porch or the person who sent him had access to her life before any of this happened. Nancy was 84, lived alone, kept a routine, and had a circle of people moving through her world on a schedule. Caregivers, service workers, contractors, delivery routes, investigators have publicly cleared her family. But the family is not the orbit. 16 days before Nancy vanished, an 83-year-old named Gail Crane was taken from her Kentucky home by a caregiver who'd been fired the day before, found 100 miles away, bruised, bleeding, with neck swelling she couldn't explain. That's another area that people are talking about, and I'm not bringing it to the table to go, see, this must be it. I'm bringing it to the table because people are talking about it. So let's parse it out. The blueprint is documented. The question is whether it maps to Tucson and whether one detail in Nancy's own porch kills the theory entirely. So let's parse it out for a moment. And it's easy because this is not the first one we've seen where, see, there was a kidnapping of someone or someone taken against their will or an old person disappeared within a 100-mile radius of Nancy Guthrie. Wow, this must be connected. Do you know how many people are within 100 miles of where Nancy Guthrie disappeared? It's size of more several countries. There's a lot of people there. And when you have a lot of people, things like this happen. Obviously, you look for signs, you look for smoke, and a lot of times it's not even enough smoke coming off of a lighter. So when an 84-year-old vanishes from her own home, the first suspect, the first suspect list isn't strangers. It's everyone with a key, a schedule, a reason to be on that property. Let's walk through that. Take me through how the list gets built in the first 48 hours and how fast it grows before investigators start cutting down who we don't need to be looking at when something like this takes place.
Well, typically, You're going to start as close as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Law of averages research says that if there's going to be any harm against anyone, it's typically the family. You know, you start looking there first and then you start looking relationships, you look at behaviors in order to clear family, you're looking at alibis, you're looking at timelines, you're looking at means and methods and intent. And that's how family members then get cleared. And then you start looking at then what we call the concentric circles of access. And when it comes to a case like this, where there's looks to be from the porch guy, a recon, it looks to be familiarity, but not over familiarity. In other words, just the small data points we're getting, to me, from the very, very get-go, I've definitely been on board with this was premeditated, mm-hmm. but not necessarily premeditated by someone who actually was the caregiver or was the gardener or was the pool boy, but someone who talked to the pool boy, the gardener, the caregiver. I think this is potentially one degree of separation from Annie and Annie's family, but someone who's a close relative or associate with someone who had that direct knowledge. Because there was enough familiarity to want to target Nancy, but not enough to actually say there's value here. Because I think that's why this thing looks so mysterious to so many people, is because no one can conclusively say what exactly, something was targeted in this home. That I think everyone can agree upon. It comes down to, was Nancy herself targeted or something be stolen from that house targeted? I know you have a lot of people around that Nancy was targeted for retribution or for ransom or whatever it is, which when you start boiling it down, it falls out of the averages. How it was done, the number of people involved, the behaviors involved, the time of day, the way the ransom, supposed ransom was given. It's just never done that way. And then you mm-hmm. do on more on the 60% side, if you just look at a law of averages, targeted for a very specific robbery inside the house, cash, medications or jewelry, and nothing was taken in the house. But it looks like 42 minutes from some beginning to ending of this event, which is documented. someone was looking for something, but there was nothing of value. How come there's nothing of value? So in other words, both, you go down both sides and both completely fall apart with there's nothing to be gained. There's literally nothing to be gained because both sides are completely dumb. And so that just brings us down to the simple fact of, think about this. When have we ever covered a case where the person doing the wrong was smart? Mm-hmm. This is not an outlier. This is not going to be the one case we cover in years that says, wow, this one was a really smart guy. He really got away with it. No, this is just another friggin' idiot that heard from his buddy, hey, old woman's got money tied to Savannah Guthrie. You ought to go after this house.
A question I would have, and we don't know the answer to it, so it would be kind of conjecture at this moment, but I'm curious, you know, what it would mean to you if it went either way. If there was anything in the house of value, I would imagine Nancy Guthrie had some things of value in that house. I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. I would imagine at her age, wedding ring, jewelry, things. I don't know. I mean, I could be completely wrong. It could be somewhere else. But okay. So if there was something of value that was easily accessible, even if you accidentally killed her, even if she's knocked out or she's incapacitated, clearly there was blood that was found on the way out of the house. So something happened to Nancy. Mm-hmm. So she's injured. You're taking her out. Would you, I don't know what the stats are on this, but you might know this stat, man, of leaving the valuables behind and just taking the, oh shit, Nancy's aware of us with us. Wouldn't you take your valuables too? If this is the original goal, if you're going to have to deal with her, why don't you take your payday as well?
You would think so if you weren't an idiot.
Then you add that to the equation.
Yeah, so remember, this is an idiot. And if the idiot had it built up in his mind because he heard from a buddy that there's things of value in there, you're going to keep searching until you find things of value. So I did the research on this. Typically, an 80-year-old woman or elderly person living at a home alone, on average, again, this could be an outlier, but on average, at the very most, they have maybe a couple $1,000s in cash. And jewelry worth, if she had any gold jewelry, because gold right now is selling over $4,000 an ounce. I watched Gold Rush and I just looked it up. And so even if she had gold jewelry, and actually Annie was a jeweler. So if you heard from a family friend that Annie's a jeweler, maybe she got gold jewelry or something that she gave her mom, you know, that there might be something in the house. On average, elderly people only keep a couple $1,000s worth, if that, of jewelry. So if you're looking for a big cash payday or a jewelry payday, or you went rifling through her medicine cabinet thinking that there's going to be some sort of medications. The medication street value for the heart medication that she's most likely on was also only in the hundreds of dollars. And so if you went in there with a preconceived notion of a big cash payday because your moron friend told you it was there and you didn't come across anything, and the elderly woman wakes up and you shove her aside and she's fragile. So you see, it's very easy, much easier going down the road of that. And also, if you're going to steal something because it looks like this person had some reps of doing some B&E or entering houses, even if it's targeted for her, you're going to go for things that aren't traceable, which is only mm-hmm. cash, high cash. In other words, you're looking for a safe. You're looking for a sock drawer that has something hidden in it. You're going to ignore the stuff that you think is petty crime if you mm-hmm. went through all this effort and security risks to do this with your reflective crap that you're wearing. So again, I'm just going on the low end idiot still of targeted for something, didn't find it, shit went sideways, panic escalation, remove body. And I know it's contrary to a lot of other people, and that's fine because I live in the world of maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I mean, honest to God, the reflective stuff is really what gets me to one of like, this guy's not a genius at all. I mean,
and that's what Jim Clemente says too.
It's like if you're going to, like, if someone shines a flashlight on you and you reflect, like, it's not a good look for a burglar. Like, you want to be the one that blends in, that people go, oh, there's nobody here. You're not wearing reflective clothing like you're out for a nighttime jog and you hope you don't get hit. Like, it doesn't make sense. But again, lack of reps, lack of experience, it just doesn't.
And it goes to right what Wingsley just said right there. What the heck were they specifically looking for? Exactly. Yeah.
And maybe they don't know.
I think they were told something that was there, secondhand knowledge from someone who was a worker or something, a buddy, who says, the old lady must have this. She's elderly. She's related to this person. It's a beautiful house. So when you have secondhand knowledge of something that's there and you went through this time, effort, stake the place out, and you go in and you're like, there's nothing here. It's a clean house because one person lives here. And you start looking.
How deep can the investigators go, or do they typically go, I mean, on something like this when you they're not getting leads, in terms of digging into folks like that are hired for jobs around the property, whether it be gardening, whether it be whatever, somebody that's coming in, paid position to do a task around her property that, you know, might know somebody like, hey, you want to go to that house? Being that guy, or woman, whoever, because that the tendrils out of that are far and wide. But so how deep can they go in on that? I mean, obviously there's the immediate, the ones who would have actually been working on the property. You go check those people out. But then do they go, you know, from that immediate person? Again, this is just pure conjecture. I'm not saying a gardener in general, but let's just say gardener. Okay, this is the gardener. Gardener knows five people. There's probably a hell of a lot more. Do you then go to all those five people? And then, I mean, how far do you parse out the tendrils before it starts, like, violating people's, like, rights? I mean, people can say no to the questioning, but how far do they typically go? I mean, and you have resources involved, too, and limited resources.
Yeah, so here's typically how it works is guaranteed they talk to everyone that was associated with Nancy in any way whatsoever. Pool people, gardener people, healthcare people, you name it. They interviewed them all.
Yeah.
And because we don't have more yet that we're aware of, the likelihood that the leakage, remember, when we talk to people, friends, associate, family, we share what we did during the day, we share who we're working with, and friends and families and colleagues that we're talking to, they might pick up on things and they might have agendas that we're completely oblivious to. In other words, if say your friend is a gardener, pure hypothetical, you say your friend's a gardener and this gardener works on like 50 houses during the course of a week. And he starts sharing, you know, when you go home, you go out for a beer or something. They start, oh yeah, by the way, I have Nancy's house. And then you just start talking about it. The guy doesn't say, I should target this house. And your friend doesn't say, oh, you ought to target this house. They might be completely oblivious to other side motivations as an individual. So they just gave leakage for targeting for this one person. And unless you actually have something specific. So say that law enforcement interviews that gardener and they say, all right, who in your circle of people, friends, and associates do you think might do this? Or who do you think would target this individual? Or who do you think have a proclivity to doing that? But this friend of yours that you're just sharing, like you share with everyone in your life, you have no clue what their agenda is. You're going to have no idea. And without being able to articulate for law enforcement to go up and get a Title III and get cell phone data and all that because there's reasonable expectation that this person might have done something, you can't go any further than that.
Yeah.
And so if the person that is given the leakage of information is completely oblivious that they gave that information, it's going to hit a dead end.
Yeah, so they're not going to actually just say how many people in your circle know that you work for Nancy Guthrie. I mean, they're not going to go that deep into it.
Well, they could. But then where do you go from there? Unless they can, and even if they said, well, I had a conversation with this person about Nancy, if they go interview that person, they'd have to then have more to be able to get more. In other words, in order to ramp up sophistication and intrusiveness of the technique, in order to move from just an interview to get cell phone information to be able to do a trash cover like they did in Koberger's case, be able to follow someone, and in order to get more intrusive into someone's life, we have this beautiful thing called the Constitution. You can't do anything without probable cause. And unless this person as an individual gives you more probable cause to be able to use a more sophisticated, intrusive technique, you're not going to get it. And so it's going to be very, very challenging. And especially if this person that was the gardener is protecting their friends and family because they know that they might not have the proper status in the United States or they might have other legal things going on. Whatever it is, they're not going to share anything about who their friends and associates are.
And to be clear, in case you're just joining us, we're not saying it's the gardener. This is all pure conjecture.
Oh, yeah, I said pure conjecture. Yeah, hypothetical.
Pure conjecture on someone who might be in the circle. I'm going to go with Mr. Plum in the conservatory with the candlestick.
Yes.
But the that's what I'm wondering about, is the logistics of doing that. Because if you're looking at the periphery of who's in Nancy's life, that would be, it would be like the gardener, or it would be someone who maybe, I don't know what she had coming and going from her house for her services that she would
and
be
it might
using.
Have been nothing.
I mean, she might not have any. I don't know. I don't know if she does.
I think there's a pool company involved.
Yeah, I know there's a pool company, but so you have that, or whatever it may be. So it's basically looking at the periphery of the periphery to see who's in that lane. But that's a very hard group of people to look into. But like you're saying, and there may be just leakage of life that, you just, for example, I have a great crew here that does my lawn work. And there's a bunch of people that come and go. I know the guy that runs the company. I know him because I interact with him all the time, but he's got a crew and it's a rotating group of folks all the time. And hard workers, but yeah, I could see, he probably doesn't know them all in great, detail like he would his own family or someone who's been with him for a long time. So as those folks come and go, I could see, you're out for a beer or you're whatever, you're just chatting at lunch and, that's, that her mom was that Today Show. Okay. And you don't know what the other person's, may just go, oh, that's neat. You may be pointing it out because it's a neat little factoid. And you don't know that person may go, oh, there's a lot of fucking money right there. And then their own, and then they go and tell, but how do you get to that? How do you identify the person in the periphery of the periphery that would then have someone in their own periphery that may be the person who says, I'm going to go do this. That's the challenge. And because of the Constitution, that damn thing, we can't
thing,
just
man.
Go and interrogate any random person we feel like.
Well, you can interview a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And typically what happens at this point, and this is why it seems to be stalled right now, because this is old school, no forensics in the sense of DNA or anything. This is just old school interviewing, which really, really works very well if you have a great set of interviewers, investigators. Yep. And what typically happens is when you start sensitizing an environment of people that want to, see, there's the key, that want to help solve this in that kind of community, as you start sensitizing that environment of, hey, they're looking for someone that might be associated with this case, then you get leakage. In other words, if say the hypothetical pool guy was out, like you said, having a beer with someone, giving some leakage, people now are going to, in that circle around that person that might have had that malintent towards Nancy or doing something, they are typically the ones then that call in the tips that, hey, I don't know, man, JoJo was acting really different this week, and they call the tip line, and that's how these things get solved. But if that circle is afraid of law enforcement, doesn't like law enforcement, or that person is so bottled up and so controlled because they have a lot of reps doing this, they know, keep their mouth shut and give no leakage. They're so familiar with this. They've done it so much. They look so comfortable doing these things like they did on the front step. It's totally blown off by the people in their circle, so there's no tip to call in.
Yeah. And and you're dealing with a group of people that have reason not to get law enforcement involved, not for anything to do with Nancy Guthrie, but for their own reasons of legality of the country, things of that nature. You're not going to want to get them mixed up into your world because there may be repercussions for you that have nothing to do with this. While you're just trying to do a good thing, it's going to bite you in the ass. So people are going to act on their own self-interests as they do it. And that's to be expected. So it ends up going into a pool of folks that may not be as forthcoming as they'd even like to be because of their own self-interest. And that's understandable. I get that.
And to Race and Rodeo's comment there, why has no one recognized Porch Guy? His things evolved. I think someone has recognized Porch Guy, but it's not in whoever recognizes him best interest to share that information.
Yeah.
And that's what it keeps coming. So fear is the greatest motivation of human beings. We take the path of least resistance, and like you're saying, Tony, we're always going to act in our own best interest in terms of our safety, security, and prosperity from our perspective. And so If you have a group of people or one person that might recognize Porch Guy, and it's not in their best interest from their context to give that information because maybe they're making money off the books and they don't want the IRS coming. Maybe they have a mm-hmm. status, you know, our country's not right. Maybe they've done something else illegal that they don't want to highlight. Or maybe they just had a really bad taste working with Pima County Sheriff. They want to say, screw them. I mean, you have no idea what it could be. But for whatever reason, from this fact that we don't have anyone now, that's what someone's thinking. Or going to, you know, our good friend Jennifer Coffin Devers Singh, maybe it was just some big, you know, cartel thing somewhere that targeted her. I mean, which, you know, they wouldn't share it anyway. So there's a lot of reasons.
One more on this lane before we go to our next one, because it's one that's been popping up and I see people, you know, some people making videos like, oh my God, look at this. And that's the Gail Crane, 83, had Alzheimer's, taken by a caretaker, fired the day before. So, I mean, there's already context here. Found 100 miles away with injuries that she couldn't explain 16 days before Nancy. I mean, does a blueprint like that map into anything on this case? Why do people find that to be so compelling when they're, I mean, other than old woman abducted? Other than that, I don't see any remote connection. And guess what? Old people go missing and get abducted all the time.
We've said this so much times on the show. As human beings, we're the only organism on this planet that loves to see patterns where they don't even exist. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this is. It's an event, and we want to try to build a connection because human beings, we love a mystery. It's why we explore, because exploration is part of our genetic coding, because if we didn't explore, we'd still be living in caves trying to spark fire and create the wheel. I mean, it's just what we do for survival. Mm-hmm. So we're always trying to understand the what is around us. We're trying to solve these mysteries, and we're trying to innovate through these problem-solving things. And so things that help us do that is recognizing patterns, because when we recognize patterns, we can survive, we can hunt, we can thrive. But also part of that downfall of that is we see patterns where there really aren't patterns. They're just an anomaly. Or in this case, it's not even an anomaly. That is just one of thousands of people that go missing, elderly people that go missing in just that manner. I mean, I guarantee you, if folks just, like most of the time when on the show, as I'm doing, I'm Googling and AIing the hell out of stuff nonstop so I can actually see the stats on it. Do it for yourself. You'll see it's not uncommon.
No. Now, your thoughts on this part in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. There's one more theory we're going to discuss here. Look forward to continuing this part of the conversation there. Links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Been waiting for this conversation. I'm excited about this to learn what is going on here. A blockchain security firm called Certik tracks crypto-related kidnappings around the world. In its 2026 report, it put Nancy Guthrie's name on the official wrench attack list alongside other verified cases in France, the UK, and a Scottsdale home invasion that happened the day before Nancy Guthrie disappeared. Scottsdale, not all that far away from where Nancy Guthrie disappeared from. The firm counted 34 verified incidents globally in the first 4 months of the year, a 41% increase, with roughly $101 million in losses. A wrench attack, in case you're wondering what the heck we're talking about, means physical violence used to force access to cryptocurrency. Basically, buy that $10 wrench and you can get the money versus some big, intricate, multi-million dollar system. Handlers overseas, disposable operatives recruited through encrypted apps and violent home entries. Jennifer Coffendaffer is with us. She's been one of the loudest expert voices connecting this model to Nancy's case. And I said before, checks a lot of boxes. But a standalone analysis of this, of the evidence, has raised problems the theory hasn't quite answered, starting with the fact that no crypto connection to this family has been publicly identified. This is where the theory meets its hardest question. And here to discuss on a Monday, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Welcome to a new week, everyone.
Hey, week.
So Nancy's case, what makes Nancy's case belong on this list when a lot of those evidence elements are not there? I guess the biggest question is, Jen, how did it even get on the list? Because this is not what the authorities have been saying whatsoever so far.
Well, you're right. And it's kind of interesting how I even came across this was just knowing that Certicate is really the number one go-to SME for the FBI. This is who they go to when they have a crypto case, and they have used them in other cases, including that Korean case, which is the big whammy of a case that spiders into different cases. They use Certicate's work for that. So, you know, very interesting. So my question is, Certicate obviously has blockchain information that none of us have. Uh-huh. You know, look at different trends, whose blockchains are intersecting with who. What do they know that we don't know that put them on the list? In other words, were they able to establish that Savannah Guthrie and her husband have crypto? It wouldn't surprise me at all that they have Bitcoin. They're worth $45 million. They should have been investing in it. So it makes a lot of sense, but now to see Certicate say, to me, that was huge. And it's the biggest public notice we have.
Well, that's a weird thing about it, is the fact that it was just kind of like silently released in this document through Certicate. It's not from an official channel like the FBI or Pima County. I guess the first thing I saw or I thought of when you sent that to me the other night, I was like, did somebody accidentally publish something they shouldn't have published? Like, was this on a draft of like, oh, well, we know this. Yes, but the public doesn't yet. So we can't put that out there in this sort of context. I mean, is there something like that going on here or what?
I don't think so. I think it's that Certicate, like any other company, is not bound by those rules. And because the FBI isn't releasing anything in Pima County. Now, I do want to say what Pima County has said on this. Uh-huh. And it's interesting. They have said, we have not had any wrench cases. We have not been notified of any wrench cases. That's literally what they wrote. Uh-huh. I don't know. What does that mean? You notified of a wrench case. How about, through our investigation, we don't believe Nancy is a wrench case, then who the hell is it? I mean, how can you say something is in a negative when you don't know the positive, unless they know the positive? In other words, who their suspects are.
Do you think this changes what they're investigating, how they're investigating, the resources that they're bringing to bear on this, Jen? Because, I mean, I just looked it up. In 2023, there were 69,000 type scams that involve crypto in 300,000 in 2024. I mean, it's a huge number that involve crypto on type scams that we've been involved in as the FBI. But obviously, it's different resources. Do you think this is actually helping the investigation, having different resources and a different look at this?
Absolutely. And we've known from the beginning. I looked back at this again to double check. Pima County has said over and over again, listen, we're using other professionals, right? We're using private professionals. And we know from being in the FBI, that's what we always did. Our 13,000 agents, they don't have this sort of knowledge. None of them do. So right. You have to hire people in the private sector. Look how they got the video footage. They didn't get it because the FBI got it. They got it because the Google experts got it. And that's the same thing here. They should be looking, as we've said from day one, at that Bitcoin account. Who opened it? How was it opened? You and I go to open one, and all that information is going to be available. All of it. So what happened here?
Do you think when do you think they really truly got involved? And you think the tempo of not knowing more now, or do you think they know more behind the scenes? In other words, has this been like the main thrux or a main thrux from the very beginning, do you think? And we're just finding out about it, or are they brought in later on this?
Well, look, I know we're just sleuths now out here. And I've been looking at this for months, you know, saying, could this be a wrench? Could clear back in March. So my whole point is, as an FBI agent, heck yeah, we should have been looking at this, because to say this is not sophisticated unless they know they already have a target picked out, it doesn't make any sense not to look at this avenue.
So they're listing it as a wrench attack on their report that they put out there. What does that translate to in reality? What does that mean at the end of the day? If they're saying this is what it was, okay, how do they get to that conclusion? Like, what is that? What does that mean in the real world?
Well, Robin, you know how this is when you have all of this information that Certicay has. In other words, all this blockchain information and related individuals who have opened up accounts and accounts that look squirrely and problematic. Plus, they're going to have the account that was listed on the ransom demands, right? They're going to have all of that. So they have this huge stew that they're able to look at that we're not able to really see. And to me, when I saw Certicay come out with this, I thought, ooh, they have put together some blockchain information that we don't have that has led them to this conclusion.
Do you think one of the challenges they're having right now is why it's, again, it's we're always in a compressed time span because this actually could be moving just at the same tempo that they'd expect it to move to. But since we're so examining it from the outside in, it looks like it's moving slow. So do you think one of the challenges they're having is, all right, so they're looking at the blockchain, they're looking at the crypto, and there's someone who created it, someone is doing it. But do you think they might be having a hard time relating that aspect of it to the actual crime itself? Is that one of the disconnects that they're trying to bridge the gap between those two, or do you think they already have it?
You know, I think the biggest problem for them is connecting it to who.
Right.
Who's behind the whole thing. And that's the biggest problem with these wrench attacks. And we call it a wrench attack, but really what it is it's a fancy word for ransom for crypto in this case. It's by proxy. In other words, they didn't go in there and beat Savannah for her key, right? Her key to her crypto. They took Mama, hoping that this would work to get the 6 million in crypto. So to just not make it too, it sounds sexy or whatever, or confusing to say wrench. I know everybody's like confusing. Oh, that's not Occam's razor. Oh, it is Occam's razor because it's saying exactly what they did. They went in there, they abducted her, and they asked for money. She died. They didn't get it. And now they're all hiding.
So one more follow-up to that before I keep stealing from Tony. Sorry.
You're fine.
So one of the things I looked up when I saw, you know, crypto and wrench attacks is that they typically will target people they know, like Tony said at the very beginning, that they know have crypto or can easily create crypto. And since it hasn't been part of anything we've seen publicly about Nancy having crypto or Savannah having crypto, it's just an assumption. Is there any way that someone who was going to perpetrate this could look up anywhere to see if they actually did have crypto? In other words, it wasn't just a wild guess that they did or could have it, that they actually were able to get some sort of evidence in some way that said, oh yeah, that they probably definitely have it, so we're going to do this.
That's such a great question. And that was always the one we were proposing, right? Well, now to me, with Certicay putting this on their wrench report attack, this shows me that they have found that. That's at least the inference that I think one could make. Now, I did reach out to a Bitcoin expert that I've worked a lot with on this case. He said, because I asked him, could he do it? He said, no, he's not capable of doing that. But Certicay, I reached out to him about the Certicay, and they are capable.
So, I mean, essentially, is this telling us that they know a heck of a lot more of who's behind the abduction and likely murder of Nancy Guthrie? Are they connecting this to the ransom demand to someone who has Nancy? Because your other side to that coin is basically a ransom demand, and they have nothing to do with Nancy, but they're just trying to capitalize on the exposure of this. So they're basically doing a wrench. It's a wrench attack without a wrench attack. It's just a ransom demand is all it is for people who are desperately wanting their mother back. I guess I'm confused as to ransom demand, no real connection to Nancy versus ransom demand, true connection to Nancy. The fact that they're publishing this makes it appear more so that they have connected the ransom demand truly to the people who have Nancy Guthrie. Am I interpreting that accurately?
That's how I take it, Tony.
Yeah.
And I think it answers a lot of questions on one front, but creates some confusion on another front. The questions it answers is, how has the FBI not been able to crack these 6 communications that came through? When I say 6, 3 times the 2 letters, right? 3 different locations.
Yeah.
how can they not crack this? And when you look at a sophisticated wrench type organization, you're not going to be able to crack it. It's going to be very, very difficult. It's also going to be almost impossible to hook them up with the moat that they hired, just like the wrench attack we saw in Scottsdale. Red and Eight, you know, through a signal app. It's going to take a long time to ferret through who Red and Eight are. And I'm sure it's, you know, backstopped behind all sorts of international emails, using public email addresses and using VPNs, all sorts of issues that are created. But that kind of indicates to me, it's an indicator that another indicator that this could be a more sophisticated people behind this. But I think the question that it begs, why would they do that? If Moak tells them she's dead, why in the world then do you send out things to these media sources? And I've been looking for other wrench attacks by proxy that have been handled this way, that have gone to the media. And essentially, this is the rub, right? Are you doing it because you know this way you can communicate to them without getting caught, right? How else are you going to communicate with them at this point? You're not going to leave a letter. No one leads a letter anymore except the gangbangers that do this. So how are you going to email them? Are you going to text them? No, you're going to have to contact them publicly. That's how I see it. And I have seen in wrench attacks a couple of things. One, a lot of times wrench ransoms are paid without proof of life. Did you know that?
No.
They pay it. I had a couple of examples because they're terrified that their loved one is going to die. So they just go ahead and pay it. And at least in one example, they got the person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the thing is, they care about the money. And I could see them going after it to a point, right? In other words, hoping that they're going to get the $6 million. If it wasn't for the person, could it be for the body? And then they never got it. And then they're out like a ghost. Now, obviously, this is just one premise, but something they have to look at really closely.
This is kind of a broader picture question, but and maybe I don't know what the answer to this is. The fact that these lanes of communication, these lanes of transaction even exist. Obviously, there's always been back end, somewhat illegal ways of transferring money amongst people in untraceable ways. This seems to be kind of the latest incarnation of it in the way that our world is functioning. But the fact that these do exist, and a lot of these outlets and these paths to make transactions in a fairly untraceable way, if the FBI can't even crack this shit. Why do these lanes even exist? I mean, and a lot of them are legal. Is there something, should there be a more of a crackdown on these sort of lanes even existing, or is it really, you're never going to stop this at this point? The channels exist, legal, illegal, they will always be there, and criminals will use them to further enrich themselves and control.
Well, they're going to always be there and they're always going to use them. Crypto is going nowhere. In fact, people believe it's the future for us. But nevertheless, no matter what you believe, they're going to be there. And that's exactly why you have a $2 billion company called Certigate.
Yeah.
To track all of this down and to help law enforcement. They work hand in hand with the FBI. I talked about one case, multiple cases with the FBI and with law enforcement throughout the world, to try to identify these types of transactions and issues, things they see in the blockchain when new nodes or whatever are created, wallets are created that lend themselves to looking problematic. That's what Certigate does. Mm-hmm. And so I find this all very interesting. It's just so outside the realm of law enforcement's normal, what they normally look at.
So it's interesting. I've been doing a lot of research as we've been talking, just kind of filling in some nooks and crannies. So, and we've been saying, exploring this idea from the beginning. So wrench attacks are most common. 2 to 4 people is the most common number, which means that the greatest vulnerability, because I looked up that, which typically trips up a wrench attack, is its operational security. Victim survives, identifies them, which we don't have here. But bad planning, crypto tracing, victim resistance. Those are the most common things that trip these guys up. And so it's always human leakage that does that. And yet we don't have this in this case yet. And that's why it's interesting and challenging if it is the crypto one. And then also, and to your point also, I did look up how common is crypto without proof of life. And yeah, it's actually paying with weak to partial proof of life is very common in the crypto things too. So we just looked it up on the fly for us. But yeah, so I'm still curious. How come we just haven't had more leakage in some way if other people were involved? Because like we've been saying, it's all these theories start fitting at the very beginning. But as we start going down the path and we start narrowing in, they all completely is like, God, that doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. And like it all, as close as you get, poof, it kind of evaporates. It's frustrating.
Well, when you look at this one, I don't see the poof it evaporates yet because of this. If first of all, you're never going to get any leakage from the guys at the top. I mean, they're probably in another country ordering all of this around. They are on to their next victim as soon as this ended and maybe even at the same time. So they're moving on. You're not going to get them, probably. As far as the mope, the one that answered the ad, the one that wanted to be the Green Goblin for a night, and stuff, a gun that didn't fit a holster in front of his crotch. That guy, what if he's a loner? Seriously, what if he's a loner? I agree with you. I haven't seen one under two, but that doesn't mean they exist. And that doesn't mean that this is one where this guy said, listen, I'll do this on my own. I don't need any. Maybe the others say, I need some help. Remember the one up at Scottsdale? Two people that didn't even know each other. Such idiots.
Yeah, I would think, though, because we were talking about this the other day. I agree. I mean, because Jim Clemente said he's looking like a loner. If he is a loner, this does not look like a dude that knows how to do crypto. So I would think if it was crypto, it would have to be at least one other person, because typically it's one person in control, one person to do the wrench or the, you know, the influencing to give it up. It's just what I meant by it falling apart towards the end is that typically, again, but this is a different case because of Nancy's condition when they depart the house, is that they maintain that pressure over time and contact with the family in order to get something. And that kind of just would kind of fizzled out, too.
Well, I mean, an interesting thought with if it is a mope and this guy really didn't have a whole lot of contact or relationship with the higher ups that are telling him, here's what you're going to go do. It could be somewhat conceivable, I would think, that, okay, he goes in, this goes horribly wrong, he decides, and it becomes basically a B&E gone bad, ends up, you know, taking her body out, disposing of it. He can't go back to them and be like, hey, she's dead. Maybe he just goes off the radar, too, to even the higher-ups that are trying to execute this wrench attack, and the last thing he's going to do is like, oh, I was answering an ad and doing this job, and it went horribly wrong, and they have no interest in being like, oh yeah, the mope we hired, he fucked that up. It seems like a lot of people have a pretty vested interest in saying nothing and getting off the radar pretty quick. Right. And to the folks that may be trying to execute the wrench attack from higher up, this is probably just one of many that they're throwing the fishing lines out there to see what mopes they're going to get to run it out. And this one ended the way it did. If he doesn't want to be caught, and it's only him who knew about it, on the local level, because the controllers are some faraway land, that, I mean, it kind of plays the two theories together in a sort of a way.
Good.
That's exactly what I meant. Is not that this is a one person deal at all. I just meant a one mope.
Mm-hmm. One local, right? Yeah. One executor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just mean one executor.
Like an independent contractor for the the wrench folks.
Only one Green Goblin, everyone.
Yeah,
so one. If he's a loner and that's the situation, that could explain, as you mentioned, why isn't there more leakage down below? And I think that would be a plausible answer. There was something else you said, Tony. Oh, I can't remember now, as far as the concern. Oh, I know. It was that they're not relentlessly going after the money. Uh-huh. Are they? What really drives me crazy is that we say, or they say, somebody says, that the other notes aren't connected. The FBI has not said that, but mm-hmm. Stefana said the first ones are and the last ones, you know, aren't. Or she doesn't say they're not. She just says the others are. How does anybody know that? If you don't have the addresses, the IPs, if you don't know who sent any of them, and I'm not talking about the ones to individuals, I'm talking about the ones to the media. Same MO, both asking for crypto. How do you know they're not related to one another?
Well, and I think the answer is nobody knows. And I think a lot of some of the statements that Savannah has read or made, not necessarily scripted statements, but just like her own visceral reactions to things. So many people, I feel like, have taken her words as if they were coming straight from law enforcement. That well, she says she believes they're connected. Well, that's what she believes. And she's totally entitled to believe whatever she would like. It's her mother. But it doesn't mean it's fact. It doesn't mean that that's truly where the investigation is at. It's where what her gut is saying. And I think there's been a lot of that with this case where there's so much gray and every kind of picks and chooses what they think is green and not gray. And some of it, and you pick and choose and you move some of them this way, well, then your output is this. When you pick and choose some of them that way, then your output is that. And it all depends what you want to believe and who you want to believe it from and what feeling is fact. And that's why this case is so damn confusing.
And a good point on that, Tony, you know, and Jen, when, again, it's not taking away anything from Savannah or anyone in her family commenting on these notes,
no.
But how many ransom notes have they personally read in their entire lives?
Yeah, I mean, where are they coming from?
There's no reps in it. You know, they don't have a background of thousands of cases of having done this. You know, they have an impression, they have thoughts, they have feelings, they have emotions, because typically our default thinking mode for a human being is an emotional thinking brain, not a pragmatic, objective thinking brain. Yeah. So that's where those things come from. No fault.
Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on the Bitcoin, on the wrench attack. What do you think? Is this something? Is this the path to which we will find answers? The links are in the description, Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.